In the dead of night, as people sleep, that is when the spirits creep. As the bell tolls three, dark things take power. We like to call it the supernatural hour. And now, our hosts.
Welcome to the Supernatural Hour podcast. I am your host, Raven.
I'm Rogue.
I'm Klaus.
And this is Doc.
And Chad's here somewhere. He's running around. He'll be back eventually.
He'll meander in here sometime.
I'm glad I'm here. I almost wasn't.
Right? You were here before me, actually.
Well, I live here, so that's easy to do. But
I was expecting you to come in later, though.
I had to come from Bountiful. And I thought I'd get stuck in the traffic, but I didn't. I'm here.
Perfect. There was a big accident on the freeway.
So as far as business goes, make sure, if you haven't yet, hop onto our YouTube channel and give us a like. And make your friends like us, too. We need 100. We're up to 74. I'm pretty proud of us.
We need subscriptions. Subscribe and like and hit the notification.
Smash that like button.
Smash that like button.
I hate that phrase.
Sounds violent.
And then take it out for dinner, and then after dinner make it pay for the meal.
Make sure you pay for the Uber.
So we have an investigation coming up. It's going to be at the Barbary Coast. It's our witching hour, so we're going to start it at 2 a.m.
Cool. And that investigation is Saturday, June 19th at 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. and It's 8 a.m. It's early morning on Saturday.
Now, is that Friday night?
It's a Friday night,
Saturday morning.
Saturday morning.
Okay. Yeah, so it's actually Saturday,
super
the
early
19th
morning.
On the tickets. It'll show Saturday. So, but be aware that that's our witching hour, you know, 2 a.m.
Yeah, so it's, if you think like me, it's very, very late Friday night.
Right.
But it's 2 in the morning on Saturday.
Friday into Saturday.
And it might, we might actually put them up a little bit earlier than 2. We might do 1:30 and meet in a thing.
But if you have never been on an investigation at 3 a.m., that's, I mean, the witching hour. It's called that for a reason. That's when it really starts to get crazy. When we usually do residentials, or, you know, most people don't like to be out 2 and 3 in the morning often, so we do them a little earlier. But if we can get out there at that 2, 3, 4 in the morning, that's when you really start getting some cool stuff.
That'll be fun. How many tickets are we going to be able to sell to that one?
I think we've got it set for 25.
25. Excellent. So get your tickets fast, because I think that one will sell out pretty fast.
It will sell out fast. And in the little preliminary investigation we did, it's going to be nuts.
Yes. In every different section of that location, we've got a little bit of something. So.
And when we've talked to a number of the employees there, a number of them talked about things that have happened that they're aware of. And there was a situation with an employee there that has died. Yeah.
And we will be there on the anniversary of his passing, and he is in there. And we have just a little resident haunter that kind of hangs out and dances and does different things. So we've got a few people there that we know that are there, and we've got some downstairs that we're not sure who's there.
And the Barbary Coast will be providing some appetizers and things with this, so like we did with the Daltons. It won't be quite the dinner of the Daltons, but it will be.
There'll be food.
There'll be food. We'll make it. It'll be a great time.
So get your tickets.
Since we've podcasted last, is that a word?
It's got to be. Right?
It is
at this
now.
Point. At
it
this
is
point.
Now.
It's a word now. We went out to Merkur. We've talked about this a little bit here and there the last few months, but we went out to Merkur and did a service project, strengthened up some of the fences. There's fences, little picket fences around some of the graves, and they were getting wobbly and broken, and some of them were missing. And we went
replaced
up.
Slats that were missing. Yep. From some of the fences, and some of them that were broken, took the broken ones out, put them in.
Yeah, and some piece of work decided to try to dig up one of the graves.
Oh,
and
geez.
So Rogue and I filled that back in.
Yes, we did. And if you check out our Facebook page, you can go and see where we went live and check out at the experience live with us.
So that was pretty fun. It felt got me in the feels.
Yeah, a lot of painting. Not everything was painted, but a lot of things were painted and cleaned up. And, you know, this was not a, we're going to go through and make it look like a pristine, brand new cemetery. But we did want to shore up things that were
wobbly.
Starting to wobbly. And
help preserve it.
Preserve it and whitewash. And the new slats that we put on, they got a coat of paint and... probably not a really good coat of paint. They kind of look like the old ones that were kind of worn.
So Rogue and I, it just reaffirmed that if you're ever following us to get somewhere, you will get lost.
Every time?
Every time. We got kind of rambled around in the boonies, but we...
It was hilarious.
We got there eventually. We made it there.
Good time. Still have the scratches on my truck to prove it.
Now, it's not hard to find Merker Cemetery if you want to go out there. Follow the things, but Rogue and Raven took a bunch of the supplies in Rogue's truck up around...
with four-wheel drive.
Four-wheel in. And so yes. That's where it was a little bit more difficult. But it's really easy to find it. You can actually see the cemetery and some of the fences from the road.
And again, if you check out the Facebook Live, you can catch Chad hauling paint up the walkway.
Yeah, we ran out of paint. Those old pickets... sucked up the paint.
Sucking it up.
Crazy.
Yeah. We brought a couple of gallons, and they went really quick. I had to run into Twilla and get five more gallons, and we used almost all of that, too.
Right. So there's a boatload of paint out there, almost literally.
So thanks to Boar for coming out and helping us out with that. We couldn't have done it without them.
Oh, they were great.
They're great. And they do a lot of service projects, actually. They did another one at Cascade Springs just the next weekend, so they're... they love doing the service project. So if you're looking to do a service project, hook up with Boar. They've got service projects all over the place.
And we had a good turnout. We had about 25 people or more. It was good. We had pizza and donuts and
oh, we had
soft
lots
drinks.
Of pizza.
So much pizza. Like, I was throwing it away a week later out of my fridge. So tired of looking at that. So much pizza.
Yeah. I said, I'm going to leave you with the pizza. And she's like, okay. And I just left three and then I ran away really fast.
Three. Here's me.
One for you. One for
me.
One for your
and
son.
And another one for me. Yeah, it's been great.
Everybody likes
Doc's
pizza.
Doc's family got three.
Did they?
Yeah, but I got four kids, so.
Right?
That stuff got eaten.
Should have had seven. Seven. And then she sent me home with like a dozen donuts. It's like, what is this?
Better for you to eat them than me.
Yeah, donuts. That's exactly what that was. That wasn't very fair.
When we do things, we do them big.
Yes.
Well, we didn't.
Yes. Yes.
We didn't want anyone to go hungry. Did you go hungry? Were you hungry?
No.
Okay, see? Job done.
No, I wasn't hungry. No, I was not. So, anyways, that was a wonderful time. I think that was great. We definitely left it better than we found it. We got to meet some other campers, some other people up there. That was interesting. A photo crew was up there. And so good times. I hope we get to get up there again so we can make sure everything's looking good.
We gave out a bunch of business cards for our podcast, and we hope some of those people are listening. We hope they're new.
Right.
Because we like to get new listeners. And along with that, as always, tell your friends about the podcast. We're really trying to expand our reach to get it to more people. And so please share our podcast with others.
Yes. And I've been trying to get out and find new places. I'm getting out on Facebook Live and just trying to really interact with everybody. So if you can come up with some ideas for us to go, places that you want to see, let us know. We're giving you opportunity to talk back with us, and we would really like to hear back from you. We have some residentials to talk about. So we headed back to Payson. Payson's one of our favorite places when we're in Utah County. That's kind of the home base for Raven here.
It's my hometown.
We went to a place that we've been before.
We went to the homeowner before, but the first time we visited her, she was in Salem. So she's moved.
Oh, different home.
Different home, same people.
This home could have been out of a magazine, right? Like, I've never seen a home so magazine.
Yeah. I have not been home literally for 2 weeks. My house looks like a tornado hit it, and hers looks like it came straight out of the magazine.
Right out
beautiful
of
beautiful home.
Hobby Lobby magazine.
Home show home.
Know. Home show. It was something. It's absolutely incredible. So in that one, we had some child spirits. We had a type 2. We had to give Newman a call. That one had a couple of different things, and we had to go out and put some casket nails. I love the casket nails.
I know, but not everybody might know.
He's one of the mediums we work with, and he can cross things remotely. They had kind of a nasty type, too, and we kicked it out of the yard, but then we felt bad that it was hanging out in the neighbor's yard. And he didn't want to go willingly, and I'm not that tough to kick him out that far, so.
And Newman was able to really find a few things that we weren't aware of, that we kind of were aware of, but porthole up in the attic, we didn't have access up there. We didn't, we weren't able to get up there. Right. So Newman brings his own little twist to the investigations, I think.
Yep. So between all of us, I think we got everything cleared out of that one.
And we do appreciate Newman. He's a great guy.
We do. And I think, Newman, you're a listener, so we're going to do a big old shout out for Newman and thank you. And then outside of that, we did get to head back to Salt Lake County. However, it was via Zoom meeting. So that's always an interesting one when we make contact via Zoom meeting.
We got a guest speaker.
We do have a guest
speaker. So the reason we did the Zoom meeting is this was actually, we call her Little Catholic Grandma. She is just the sweetest lady. I just don't want to use her real name on the podcast. But she is the lady, and you've heard me tell the story before. Our group we have classifications for spirits, type 1, type 2, type 3. And it's her house that made us come up with this because somebody, Raven, may have, me, told her she had a demon in her house and it scared the pants off of this poor little cute lady. And so we decided that after that, maybe we should come up with some code words that weren't quite as terrifying. And so she's kind of Wisp's lore. We love her. We've gone out a couple times for a couple different things. We were just a little, we couldn't get out as quickly as we wanted to visit her. And so we thought we would do just a little Zoom investigation to make sure that, hoping that things weren't too nasty, and they weren't. So we still need to, we tried to get out there this week, but she wasn't feeling very good. So we need to reschedule that.
Right, right. Wonderful lady. We look forward to seeing her really soon.
Today we're going to talk about symbolism. And I'll be honest with you, it is a very, very enormously, gigantically broad topic. We could talk about this for weeks.
Not only is it broad, it is also deep.
It's extremely deep, yeah.
It's like the ocean. We could have a whole podcast just on
symbolism. Right there and there. It's like the ocean. It's deep. Oh my goodness.
And with that,
symbols.
Good night, folks.
I nailed it.
So we realize that there is no way we're going to be able to talk about everything or every aspect of this. But this is something that we have spoken with Doc about on several different occasions, and it's fascinating listening to him. So I am going to just stare at Doc until he starts talking.
Oh, well, I better start talking now. Symbolism is one of my favorite things, I think, to dive into and research. I love world religions. I like understanding deeper meanings of things. And so I've spent a few years diving into particularly archetypal symbolism. And when you think about symbols, symbols are, they can mean a lot of things. The same symbol can have multiple meanings to an individual. They're similar to parables. You can get as much out of a symbol as you're prepared to receive, I think. And so there's a couple of different thoughts about why certain symbols impact us on such a deep level. And the archetypes are kind of these primary symbols that kind of root back to our nature as human beings.
It's even broader than symbols, though. As I was looking at some of the research and listening to some of the YouTube channels where Carl Jung,
yep, psychiatrist,
talked a lot about it. And I'm sure you'll get into this, but the depth of that, he goes, you can't really explain an archetype with a symbol. A symbol is
the best representation of something,
but
it's deeper.
But it's much, much deeper than that.
Right. So the idea, Carl Jung kind of proposed this idea of what's known as the collective unconscious. And the idea behind that is that as human beings, there are almost learned behaviors, or we notice certain types of behaviors or certain types of patterns that are repeated over and over throughout society. And the idea is that some of these things carry on beyond our lifespan. that they're almost ingrained into our DNA, that they're ingrained into our species. Chad and I were talking a little bit about, you know, like ducks knowing to swim. I think you gave an example about how there was a cat that was raising some ducks, which just seems like an interesting...
Yeah, it was really interesting. And again, this gets down to what's innate and what is instinct for animals and us. And in this case, a cat whose instinct would be to kill a small bird or a duck, literally a baby duckling that was just hatched. And in this case, this cat had just had kittens. The owners didn't know about it. It had been out in the barnyard. But it saw these little ducklings that had just been born, that had been in the incubator. And it just took in these three little ducklings. And the ducklings were actually suckling on the cat. And the cat was, you know, the first time they saw the cat, it had one of these little ducklings in its mouth. And it was actually bringing it back to the litter where they, you know, where the kittens and the other two ducklings were. And the owners were kind of freaked out. It's like cats don't take care of ducklings. But what they surmise is that the cat's hormones were in that mothering, nurturing thing to the point, and she saw small, fuzzy animals, and she just nurtured them. She bonded to them, and she nurtured. And the ducklings, you know, hung around with her.
Well, and it went on to say that ducks are born to just peck at the ground and eat like mm-hmm. ducks do. They're not suckling animals, but for whatever reason they did. I don't know if it's because they saw the cats doing it and thought, okay, I guess that's what you do.
Right.
Yeah. But then in addition to that, you know, you get into the nurture versus nature. You get into addition. So part of this is nurture with the cat mother pulling it in and, you know, putting her arm around him and protecting him. But then she's looking at him like, what are they doing over in the water trough?
Right.
You know, 'cause cats don't go over into the water trough and swim around. And these brand new baby ducklings are out in the water trough.
Right. They weren't coached. They weren't taught. They just knew to do that.
It was just innate in their nature.
And the way that the use of symbols, I think, as a culture or as a species kind of harkens back to these deeper innate things innate feelings within each and every one of us. And Carl Jung, he came up with 12 different archetypes, and I don't know that we'll go into all 12 of them.
And Carl Jung was a contemporary of Sigmund Freud.
Yeah, so
they did that. He was in the late 1800s, and I think he died in about 1960s or late 50s. But he's, you know, world-renowned psychologist. And a contemporary with Freud. I listened to some things about him talking about Freud and their relationship, and they worked in conjunction with each other and had different ideas on things. They had ideas that were in common on things, and, you know, they were contemporaries. It was a really interesting YouTube that I watched on that.
So a couple of the things that he would focus on, these 12 archetypes, there's different figures that we see in a lot of folklore and even in the modern day in film, you know, symbols like the magician or the hero or, you know, there's 12 of them.
The damsel in distress.
Right. And you can look at Harry Potter. Look at Lord of the Rings. Look at all these things, and you'll find
Star Wars.
Look at Star Wars, and you'll see that almost all of them have very common symbols. You know, you look at you know, Star Wars, and you've got Obi-Wan Kenobi, who's kind of the wise old man. You go to the Lord of the Rings, and you've got Gandalf. These images are something that is, it's easy for us to accept because I think they're a deeper part of each of our being, and they represent literally parts of us and what we aspire to. He also focused a lot on dream symbolism as well, and that when we have dreams about, sometimes we'll wake up and go, well, that was weird, and I don't know what that meant.
You know, it's interesting about the dream symbolism. It's not a recurring dream, per se, because the dream's a little different every time, but it has a recurring theme in it, and the theme is water. And there were times in my life where I just was going through a lot of stress and a lot of turmoil, And I didn't put these together until a little later, but when I was having stress and turmoil, there would be water in the dream. You know, it's like I would go up the canyon and there'd be a little stream. It was cute, but then it would turn into, like, you know, when you get runoff, you know, that spring runoff mm-hmm. where it's just churning and milky and frothy, and you know if you step in it, you're going to die. You know, it's that kind, but I don't. I'm usually in, you know, this pounding water, and it's terrifying, and I'm scared, but I live. And I got researching this because I thought, why am I always having these dreams? And it just said that water in your dreams means how you're feeling and how you're perceiving where you are in life. And it's like, oh, yeah. And then once I was out of that, you know, that stress in my life, I stopped having those dreams. And right. The interesting thing is with everything going on in the world that just seems crazy, I actually had the same dream just a couple nights ago, but I wasn't in the water. Just like the people of the world were in the water. So
right.
It's like my own psyche is saying, wow, the world is just really struggling right now.
And isn't that interesting that your subconscious mind is using symbols that maybe you weren't conscious to? And sometimes it takes a while for you to make that connection. But my interest in symbols, part of it started back when I was a teenager. I had a dream.
Not this dream.
I had not that dream.
Oh,
oh, we're gonna.
Wasn't the terror ride?
No,
was a great dream.
That
too.
Damn lagoon ride. that's another story. We'll go into that sometime. No, but this dream was, I was on a ladder, climbing up some bright red rocks. You know, like in southern Utah, and I just kept aspiring to get to the top of this big red rock face, and I kept going and going and going, and it was like. The thing I wanted more than anything in my dream was to get to the top. And as soon as I reached the top and looked right over the edge of the cliff, there was a snake. And the snake, you know, struck at me and I fell back and fell off the ladder. And kind of weird that the first thing that happened was I woke up and went, whoa, my life is not about aspiring to power. If I try to aspire to power, I will fall. And, you know, and I started looking into symbolism. You know, I think about red being a very, you know, color symbolism. It's a color of power. It's a color of, you know, in some ways, threat or aggression.
Well, and even if, I mean, this is a little off the subject, but most restaurants paint it red because red creates hunger.
Yeah,
and it's just another...
I thought
that was orange.
I think red's, oranges, yellows.
Okay. Yeah. It's a warm color.
That kind of color palette.
Got it. And so this kind of prompted my, I don't know, my diving into dream symbolism and just symbolism in general. And it was so strange to me that I woke up and immediately knew what it meant. And, you know, but I had to research, like, okay, I made, you know, when I started looking through dream symbol books, it made even more sense to me. And I thought, wow, you know, my subconscious mind was trying to tell me something. And if you learn what those symbols mean, I think you can get some deeper understanding out of it for sure. As far as symbolism, there's lots of types of symbolism, and that's why we can kind of take this wherever we want. There's color symbolism. There's number symbolism. We talked a little bit about the Jungian archetypes. We didn't go into much detail there. Even the signs of the zodiac. There's a lot of symbols that are in our everyday life. I mean, every business has a logo, right?
Well, and I found it interesting. I found a little quote by Confucius, and he says, "Signs and symbols rule the world, not words or laws."
Absolutely.
Everything is symbolic. Even some of the things we do when we do residentials to, you know, cleanse out spirits, we put down salt.
It's entirely symbolic.
And, you know, the homeowners will, and we don't make the homeowners ask. We usually explain while we're throwing salt all over their house. But we say, you know, the purpose of this, it's symbolic. You know, salt is a pure substance, and negative entities can't cross pure substances. And it's all about intent, and it's all about symbolism. And by golly, it works.
And sometimes in Hollywood, in the movie, when you see them doing the salt, they'll pour, you know, an inch wide band, and it doesn't need to be that much. It's just, it's the intent and what you're coming up with, not, you know, how much salt you're using.
I think if you've got something super strong, I'd probably put gobs of salt, but we don't deal with anything that terrifying.
But, you know, even there, salt is a symbol. You see that in lots of different cultures. That's not, you know, something that's just unique to one person.
I mean, well, and even going back to salt, if you're into the scriptures, you know, it talks about the salt that's lost its savor. And it's not talking about salt. It's symbolic for people.
Exactly. You know, we use sage and burning of incense, all of those things. You know, if you go to like a Russian Orthodox church, for example, you'll see incense burning. There's lots of other churches where they burn incense. And, you know, the symbol behind that is that you're taking prayers, things that are, you know, here on earth, and that smoke is supposed to be symbolic of the ascension, of your intent or your prayer to heaven.
I'm sending the prayer to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't put a stamp on it.
That's right. You can't just mail it to Jesus.
Well, I'd like this to go express. To Santa. I mean.
But, you know, there's a lot of biblical symbolism, you know, and I wasn't sure. We can talk elemental symbolism if we want. We talked a little bit about this idea of smoke.
Got notes with we're going to go everywhere.
Oh.
We're going to touch on everything just a little bit.
Well, we can.
It's a smorgasbord.
Let's talk a little bit about elemental symbolism just because it's easy. And I think it's something that people can really connect with. You know, your four main elements are earth, fire, water, and air, right? And they're divided into earth elements and, well, you can call them physical elements and spiritual elements, really. You look at water and earth, those are tangible things, things that you can fill a cup with, for example, and they tend to symbolize physical or earthly attributes. And then you look at air and you look at fire, and they're not really tangible. You can feel them, I guess, but you don't really hold them. It's not like you put them in a cup. You can't, you know, you can't weigh them, kind of a thing. They are those intangibles. Right. And it's that intangible aspect that people tend to attribute the spiritual qualities to those elements.
Well, it's interesting because if you know, look into horoscopes at all, the horoscopes are divided into the elements. So, for example, I'm a Cancer, and Cancer's a water.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Gemini. I'm air. I hate the wind, too. It's so weird.
Well, seeing with me with water, there's parts about water that I absolutely love, but there's parts about water that I find terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I don't know if it's just the subconscious. I've heard my whole life, oh, Cancer is a water sign. So I don't know if just my subconscious is like, oh, water's my element. But I like water. It's dark, it's deep, it's cool. It doesn't talk at you. See, fire's crackly and would just be loud and noisy, and water's just, and it can be.
You've been to Niagara Falls. It can be noisy.
I was just going to say it can be noisy. Quiet and deep, or it can be noisy depending on how it goes. But and
some people listen to the waves crashing into the seashore when they go to bed. So I mean, it's talkative as well.
But fire's never quiet. It's always crackle, crackle, crackle.
Have you ever heard a candle?
Cool. Okay, fine.
I mean, every once in a while they flicker, I guess.
Fine,
but you don't hear them.
No, that's true. But what's interesting with a lot of this elemental symbolism is you see it a lot of places. You know, you'll see this union of water and fire kind of an idea, or, you know, earth and air. They're opposing elements, but somehow there's magic in bringing those two things together. That's something that's a very common thread throughout the Bible, for example, is you'll see a lot of this fire and water symbolism. And it's more about bringing union to polar opposites than it is about kind of embracing one or the other.
Because if you think of fire and water, you know, fire can evaporate water, but water can put out fire. I mean, neither one of them has ultimate power over the other.
Right.
Whoever's more intense at that point.
And what's kind of funny, one of the things that I've been reading about, and take this for what you will, but if you look at religions throughout history, and I'm not, you know, and if you look at the Zodiac, there are certain periods of time, you know, there's different ages, the age of Taurus, the age of Aries,
Aquarius.
The age of Aquarius.
I was gonna say, we can sing that one.
Which everyone can sing the age of Aquarius, I guess. But, you know, they say that there are these time spans that last a couple thousand years, plus or minus, depending on who you talk to. And if you look at religions through these different times, it is kind of strange. If you go back to the Egyptians, for example, they operated during what we would have considered the age of Taurus in the Zodiac. And a lot of their worship was very much earth-based, right? They built pyramids. They built these giant mounds, these giant structures. And they worshiped things like
bowls.
You know, bowls. Yeah, there's a ritual called the drowning of the bowl that the Egyptians used to do. And it's very symbolic of what we would consider like a baptism, basically, is they would drown the bowl. And it would be, you know, basically taking the sins of the people and cleansing them, kind of an idea. And so you look, it's weird that there's this earth element, Taurus being an earth sign, and the rituals and the worship and the society is almost built on this heavy earth focus, right? And then you start moving into the Age of Aries, which is the ram, which is a fire symbol. And this is where you start moving into Moses and Judaism and Jehovah and burnt offerings.
And burning bushes.
And burning bushes. So fire becomes a big symbol. And this is where, as they start embracing this fire symbolism, they start basically rejecting the earth symbolism, the golden calf, for example. That would be the like penultimate rejection of the earthly symbol, right? And they embrace this fire symbol with a god that's not tangible, with a god that is, you know, a spiritual focus, right? And so, and worship goes that way. They burnt sheep, they burnt rams, they burnt lambs. That's the animal that they sacrificed to Jehovah. So it's kind of odd that fire symbolism, Aries, and the next phase of this the zodiac kind of plays through. And this happens for a couple thousand years. And then all of a sudden you get this birth of Christianity who comes to, you know, Jesus, who replaces the law of Moses. And what symbol would most people associate with Jesus?
The cross.
Water?
Or the water.
As far as an elemental symbol?
As an elemental, yes, water.
As an elemental symbol, water, right? As the whole focus was the fisher of men.
The
baptism,
water.
You know. And so when you move into this new age, the focus changes. And this is an idea of, instead of worshiping a god in the sky, this was God made mortal. This is a spiritual being embracing
humanity,
embracing a physical element, right? This is Jesus being baptized. You know, people say, oh, why does Jesus need to be baptized? You know, he says to fulfill the law. It's a symbol of God or the spirit coming to earth and embracing mortality, embracing the physical. It's interesting that that plays out that way. And then if you look at Jesus at the Last Supper, one of the things that he mentions is, you know, they said, well, where do we know where to find you, basically? And he said, look for a man holding a water jug. And if you look at the symbol of Aquarius, it's a man holding a water jug. And it's weird because you think, you know, holding a water jug would mean it's a water symbol, but it's actually an air symbol. And so a lot of people think we're transitioning out of this age of Jesus, where everyone embraced Christianity as a religion, and we're moving into Aquarius, which is an airy, new agey kind of an idea of worship. And so that's why society's kind of been moving away from Christianity.
Interesting.
So yeah, kind of a, it's been a, an interesting foray. And I'm not one of these guys who thinks that the zodiac really dictates a whole lot in our lives, but it's been a very interesting pattern. And I thought it was interesting that specifically in the Bible, you know, with Jesus knowing he's going away, tells them to look for the man who's carrying the water jug to know where to go.
And I know we've talked about symbolisms in the past, and one of the things that you brought up with Aries is Aquarius, is that air symbolism is also a sign of communications.
Yeah, electricity.
Electricity, mm-hmm. Communications, and it's weird that we're now in an age where technology has given us instant communications. There's ways of just communicating instantly between, I can send you a text and it goes, you know, across the world if it needed to, but that ability to now... that ability we have is crazy. That's the age we're in.
Yeah, it's like the exact opposite of what you'd see in the, you know, the age of Taurus, where everything was very concrete and focused. This is now everything is almost abstract and intangible.
Intangible.
I just think of everything that travels through the air, radio waves, mm-hmm. and airplanes and rockets, and yeah, it's just.
So in the next 1,000 years, what's our next elemental going back to Earth?
Well, yeah, we got a ways to go with the Age of Aquarius, I suppose. But yeah, we would go back to an Earth element. I'm trying to remember which one it is. I'm sure somebody listening probably remembers the zodiac cycle better than I do. The sun cycles seem to move in reverse from what the typical zodiac does, if I remember correctly.
All I know is if Mercury's in retrograde, bad stuff happens.
You know, but even going back to this whole zodiac idea, if you look at the Bible... you know, the word holy, people say, comes from the word helios, which means sun. Uh-huh. And Bible comes from books. And so the actual title of the Holy Bible would be the Sun Books. Like I said, we looked at these phases, which is kind of interesting to see some of that in the Bible. And also there's this idea of the central figure being the Son of God, the light of the world. You know, and there's so much... sun reference to Jesus as a character, as an individual, right? And then I don't think that it's coincidental that there are 12 apostles And each of those 12 apostles in a lot of ways symbolizes one of the zodiac signs. You know, the most obvious would be the backstabber, Judas, symbolizing Scorpio. And there's some other ones, Virgo and Gemini, the twin. Thomas means twin. There's some interesting overlying symbolism there as well. You know, and so sun symbolism is also something that we see in every culture, but it's not lost, I think, in Christianity or in the Bible. You know, and when I was trying to bring up this focus of sun worship to people, sometimes people question. I said, well, what day do we go to church?
Sunday!
Sunday!
We go to church on Sunday, right? I don't think that you can, in terms of, you know, Christian worship in any way, I don't think you can escape this idea that there is a big overlay with light, with the sun, in worship. It's just there.
Well, and I think it's interesting because when you think of the sun, like if you tell a child to draw a picture of the sun, what are they going to do? You're going to draw a circle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and shapes are very much integral in symbolism, not only with elements, but just by themselves. And when you're talking about the sun, it just made me think, you know, in the Egyptian Egyptian culture, the circle meant a lot of things for them. And one of them was representation of the sun god.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they use the circle a lot to talk about him. And even in the Chinese symbolism, circle expresses heaven. And if the circle is within a square, it's the, you know, coming together of heaven and earth, mm-hmm. because they use the square as a symbol for earth symbol.
Right. And if you take that back even, look, the shape of a pyramid, right?
Uh-huh.
What is the base? It's a square.
Square.
And it comes up to a singular point. And it's the same symbol that you see. It's a circle and square symbol. And so it's planted in earth, but it aspires to heaven. And just like, yeah, if you look at the, is it the Temple of Heaven in China, where the base is a square and the dome above it is circular? It's that same imagery. And it's intriguing to me that you see this everywhere. If you look at the flag of New Mexico, and I'm trying to remember, I think it's the Zia culture.
Yellow with the red circle and the
circle
rays
there.
Coming
out. And then
out
there's four rays that shoot out in four different directions. It's four rays in four directions. And the reason for that is just like you were saying is, you know, circles represent spiritual things. And the reason for that is because if you try to calculate the circumference of a circle, you know, we use a number called pi. And what is pi?
3.14159, something
dot,
like
dot,
that.
Dot, 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 dot,
but there is no.
So it's an eternal number, right? It goes on forever. And so when you're, you know, determining the circumference of a circle, truly it's an eternal number. It has no end. Not only, you know, everyone understands the circle as, you know, when you draw it, you can't see a beginning or an end, but mathematically it is without end because you use pi to calculate it. And then on the flip side, when we were talking about squares, go back to your four elements we just talked about. They're earthly symbols, right? The four forms of matter. You've got solid, liquid, gas, plasma. You've got four seasons. You know, fall, winter, spring, summer. There's four main times of day. There's sunrise, midday, sunset, midnight. And so fours are very, very physical, very earthly based. And so you see them in every culture. We just talked about New Mexico, in China, in Egypt. There's not only is there the number symbolism there, but there's the actual symbol of the square. And the great thing about a square is it's very finite. You can determine the you know, the perimeter of a square. You can calculate it out very well. It's got 90 degree angles, and you can use any of the other angles to prove the other one is a 90 degree angle. And so it's the exact opposite of a circle. But the most interesting thing about it is, you know, how many degrees are in a circle?
360.
Right. And how many degrees are in a square?
360.
Right. Because it's four 90 degree angles. And so even though they are very different in function, they are perfectly equal in degree. And, you know, from a symbolic standpoint, what that tells you is, you know, this, there's some importance. The physical and the spiritual are of equal importance. And to try to neglect one over the other, I think, is misguided.
Rogue is just shaking her head.
Such a deep topic.
interesting fact. What shape cannot fall on it into itself?
Ooh, I don't know. What's that?
The circle.
Oh.
Every other shape can fall into itself, but the circle cannot. That's why they make your manholes out of circles, because they cannot fall.
Ah, you're talking about, so yeah, it's you can't find an angle for it to drop.
Exactly. That's interesting. But if you have a square, you can find a way to make
it fall.
That's
right. You just tilt it up and boom.
Interesting fact of the day.
There you go. I learned something. So yeah, symbolism is everywhere. You see it in everything. Like I said, we were just talking about seasons. And not only is there that idea of fours, but if you get into the symbolism of seasons, you look at the spring, and it's symbolic of birth, right? And then you go to summer, which is the peak strength of the sun. It's the kind of your big, strong, healthy years.
I'm in my 20s.
Yeah. And then eventually you transition into fall, which is symbolic of our golden, you know, they say the golden years is the time the leaves change. And it's not only that, but symbolically, this is the time where we're able to reap the benefits of our work, right? This is the harvest season. And then eventually you transition into winter, which is death. And, you know, it's so interesting that our life cycles are patterned after that as well. As beings, you know, we can see so much comparison there. And that's why when you study the Druids or any of these other, you know, cultures that were very close to nature, they celebrated all of these changes because they understood the connection between the earth and us.
Now, you were talking about symbolism and numbers as well, and we touched a little bit on that, but I know coming from people who I talk to on occasion at like work and places, I've had people talk to me about numerology and stuff, and I don't know if you smile a little bit because I know you've heard numerology, but There's interesting things just about numerology, some people really take that to heart and use it almost as a religion. Like, oh, I see the number 31 everywhere, and now, you know, my life is all based around 31, and I look for these numbers, and I know each individual number has its own specific things, but I don't know if what your take is on numerology and numbers themselves.
Oh, with numbers, I mean, there is no denying that certain numbers invoke certain thoughts or feelings, you know. But like we were saying, with symbols, you know, you're going to get out of them what you're ready to get out of them, too. And what I may interpret a meaning of a symbol to be, someone else may interpret it to be something completely different. But in general, when you're looking at numbers, yeah, I mean, number one is kind of that unity, the singularity, whatever you want to call it. That one's pretty easy. And then you look at twos, and you start getting into this idea of duality. And this is where things like creation happen. You know, you look at the whole world is built off of opposites coming together. You got positive and negative charges, this night and day,
yin
light
and
dark, yin and yang, masculine and feminine, physical and spiritual, however you want to define it. And it's all the same thing. If you look at, you know, in Western society, we're not very good at identifying these things because I think we're based on a lot of concrete thinking, and if you look in Eastern religions, they're a lot more abstract, and so I think they pick up the symbolism a little bit better. But yeah, it's the twos that lead to creation, right? It's the union of man and woman that creates something else. And when you talk about progression, I use the phrase that 1 + 1 = 3, and that's really what progression is. It's when you bring two things together and you make something else. And then that's where, you know, people talk about three being a symbol of power.
I also, in some of the things I was doing, is also the Trinity. And, you know, in Christian cultures, you know, the Godhead or the Trinity, and they talk about that. And I'll go a little further. I wanted to interject that as you
yeah,
go through
absolutely.
It. Because I've got a couple of others with a couple of numbers a little further on that I thought were interesting.
Sure. Go with the Trinity, go ahead.
No, you go. That's all I wanted to say because you've got more.
Well, with, you know, with threes and, you know, you talk about power. That's one of the things. But there's so many things that play into this as well. You look at, you know, the Trinity, the Godhood, God the Father, Christ the Son, Holy Ghost. And in a lot of ways, this reflects mind, body, spirit, right? And those are things that make us who we are as well.
Right. Some of the, when I was, you know, looking in symbolism and just kind of delving into the shapes, and it talked about the triangle, it mentions it represents a lot of things. Like you just said, mind, body, spirit, past, present, future, Father, Son, Holy Ghost. It can also do love, truth, wisdom, waxing, waning, full. I mean, there's so many things that we deal with that come in threes.
Right. And, you know, and it's interesting because you go, well, why does the number three have such a big meaning? And yes, we talked about this triune nature that we have in a lot of, you know, aspects of ourselves. But also, if you look at planar space, right, you can have a singular point with one. You can have a single line with two, you know, with 2 points, you can connect them with a single line. It's not until you have three. It is the triangle is the smallest shape that creates dimension. Right, all of a sudden you've got axes, and creation can be built on those things.
And if you take one leg away, mm-hmm. you've got that three-legged stool.
Everything falls out.
Falls down.
Right, and so that's where threes start coming in really big symbolically, is this is creation occurs in that triune space, because you use the two to get to three, and it's through three that we're able to build and create, and there's now dimension to what we are and to what we do. You know, maybe Chad will have something more to say here about the Trinity. I thought he was going to chime in, but he'll be back.
to the guest speaker.
Yeah, good. So interesting that you're talking about three with these things, because one of the reasons why I bring this up is because I've also heard that number seven means perfection, which is interesting that you mean, you know, you keep talking about three about creation, but it could also, you know, mean spiritual, you know, a spiritual heavenly kind of thing, right? And then if you get to number four, I'm going to guess here that four means physical,
yeah,
earthly. So the create or to have perfection, you have to have three and four, which would be spiritual and physical.
Right. Create is completion, right? It's exactly what seven tends to symbolize, you know, because you go from the three is being able to the capacity to create, four is being able to materialize things, basically. That's the elemental nature of things.
Right. For four, I mean, there's things like north, south, east, west, you know, the seasons. When it comes to the cosmic elements, sun, moon, planet, stars, human life, birth, childhood, adulthood, death, just like we talked about earlier, the elements, fire, earth, air, water. I mean, a lot of things come in fours as well.
Mm-hmm. And yet, like we were saying, it's that union, it's the mind-body-spirit connection that allows for physical creation into things. And that's where you look at all those, you know, that four symbolism plays in. You know, and then five, you just keep going. We'll talk about pentacles if you want, the star, whatever, you know, symbol you want to use. Even the human body is kind of a symbol of five. You've got the round head that symbolizes the spirit. And then you've got your four limbs based on your somewhat square trunk, I suppose.
What's the name of that?
I have a square trunk.
What's the name of that man that you see it in medical with his arms and legs?
Leonardo da Vinci's Vitruvian Man.
Yes, I knew it had a name.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is, so we talked about the head being kind of the spirit and then the limbs being the physical, and it's that union of that makes mankind, right? It's that union of the spirit with the body. And when you look at the Vitruvian Man, you know, everyone remembers, you know, the figure with the arms and legs, whatever, sticking out, and they remember the circle around it, but very few people realize there's also a square. And so next time you look at Leonardo da Vinci's Vitruvian Man, take a closer look and you'll see that there's also a square there. And that was not accidental. Leonardo da Vinci, you know, kind of he grasped a lot of these concepts, I think, as well. And there are symbols that are also frequently seen in alchemy. So you can kind of see that there's this connection of, hey, we have a spiritual self. We have a circle, but we also have a physical self, which is our square. And then our dimensions, you know, he kind of lays out in that symbol of the Vitruvian Man.
Right. And I read a little thing that says if you want to see alchemy symbols, go look at old headstones.
Oh,
because
yeah.
They used a ton of them on the old headstones to mean a variety of things.
Yeah. And, you know, and there's a ton of things you'll see in alchemy, or you'll see in Freemasonry or whatever, you know, particularly.
Harry Potter.
Yeah, I was going to go with Fifth Element, but
or the Fifth Element. But there's some great symbolism. If you look at one of the things that I was, you know, I talk with people sometimes about these circles and squares, and you go, okay, well, let's talk about the tools that we make circles and squares with. And, you know, an architect uses a compass to make a perfect circle. You know, and I'm not talking like a compass, like a navigating compass. It's the pointy compass that you put on the ground and, you know, you put on the paper and you spin it around an axis, right, and it creates a circle. And they'll use an architect's square to make perfect 90-degree angles. And you'll see that symbolism in lots of places.
That's a huge Masonic symbol.
You see it in Masonry. There's some ancient Chinese symbolism that you'll see it in. You'll see it in alchemy with a symbol known as rebus, which is it's a hermaphroditic symbol. It's a union of man and woman. And if you look on the man's side, he's holding a compass. If you look on the woman's side, she's holding a square. And
you can see it in Harry Potter with the triangle, the circle, and the square with a line in the middle.
It all ties together, yes. You know. And so those are symbols to kind of look for. But you'll see them in lots of cultures. It's not something that's unique even to Freemasonry. You'll see it in, you know, ancient Chinese. And like we were talking about, even in Native American symbolism, we've got circles and squares everywhere. And so as we've discussed, there are tons of different symbols. I mean, we talked, you know, there's color symbolism as well. You know, talk about white meaning purity, or, you know, we talked a little bit about red being passion is kind of the big thing there. Green being fertility. And when you look at green lights, it gives you the okay to proceed, you know, and red is that warning to stop.
And yellow means go like hell.
Go like hell.
Yellow, yeah, doesn't mean yellow. Yeah, it means go like hell in this place.
My 4-year-old told me that on the way back from tumbling the other day. Green means go, red means stop, and yellow means go fast.
Go fast, yeah. No, doesn't mean slow anymore. You know, you'll see these symbols everywhere. And I think the more you start, you know, you'll notice them more and more. And, you know, our whole... We communicate through symbols. Our flags are symbols. You know, business logos are symbols.
Emojis.
Emojis are symbols. Yeah. In fact, as we're no longer using words, which are also symbols. You know, we're just using pictures these days, it seems like.
Going back to the Egyptian days.
Well, and in some ways, the emojis and those kinds of things can convey more or additional information than just the words do.
Right.
Emojis. Because people can read words and it's like, okay, are they being... sarcastic, they being, you know, I mean,
right.
And the emojis have actually given us a way in
to get context,
written text kind of. To give some context of, you know, the goofy smile or the right. The crazy looking smile that you can add a little bit of context through the symbol, where in verbal communication, oftentimes you'll pick that up through voice inflection and those kinds of things.
Right.
But in written communication, so many times people will take things wrong, and I really think the emojis have helped a lot of people communicate better.
Yeah, not run into trouble saying things and be able to let people know it's a joke or whatever. I think our society is embracing that a lot more. I think we in a lot of ways have lost deeper meanings to certain symbols, but the more you study and the more you see, the more you realize that almost everything is symbolic. There's, you know, I don't want to become a conspiracy theorist here, but I feel like you'll find symbolism in everything.
Holidays
are lots crazy. So we talked about Yule a little while back and all the symbols there too. But every holiday symbolizes some transition throughout the year generally.
And we touched a little bit on that when we talked about kind of some of the pagan stuff.
Yeah.
Several episodes ago back in September-ish, October-ish.
Yeah, Halloween and Yule and how that, yeah, there's symbolism for all of those things. But there's a lot more, I think, with symbolism if you're interested in hearing more. We can do more segments and talk about specifically number symbolism, color symbolism.
Comment on our
characters
on our pages and let us know if that's something you'd be interested in hearing more on. We could maybe do some shorter segments and add a little segment on symbolism.
Yeah, this one was a little broad, maybe a little sporadic. We were kind of pulling from a bunch of different areas, but we can do some focused segments too.
Like we said, this is a smorgasbord where get a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
It's like, hey, this will be an awesome topic. And then as we're researching it, I was like, oh.
It is an awesome topic. It's just huge.
There's a lot. I thought we're going to be talking for 87 hours.
It's a big topic.
Yeah, very much so. All right, so I guess we're moving on over to the bucket list. So bucket list this time around is mine. This is Rogue, and I'm going to ask you for help because my bucket list is I am obsessed right now with abandoned buildings, mansions, abandoned anything. I would love to find like a time capsule that I can just walk into and try to be a part of these people's lives. I keep watching everybody on YouTube do it, and I'm antsy. I want to go do this. I'm not particular as to where I find these places because right now I just want to go do one. So I have found one here local that's actually close to where my shop is, and I've already tried to find it once, but I think we were listening to the GPS too much, and I think we need to get lost. So Raven and I are going to go check this one out.
We're super good at getting lost.
We are very, unfortunate about that, but we are very
good. We even got lost in downtown Salt Lake.
Yeah.
With a GPS.
With a GPS.
To a place that had an address.
That she had been to before.
That's impressive.
Right?
Don't ever go anywhere with me. I'll get you lost.
Or both of us.
Or if you want to get lost.
Well, if you want to get lost, totally follow me, and it won't take long.
Right? So if any of you know of any abandoned places, like the one that I'm trying to get into right now is bank-owned, but it hasn't been lived in since 2008, and it is in a very prominent area. I cannot believe it is where it is, but I can Google Earth it and come right down onto it. I can see the holes in the roof.
It was probably just that triple homicide or something.
You know? Cha-ching! That even makes it better. So anything, mortuaries,
and it doesn't help that I keep sending her TikToks of abandoned buildings.
She does, and I get all excited because I think she's actually found a place for us to go, and then I just realize she's commenting on somebody else's adventure. So get us an adventure out there.
We need our own.
We do. So again, comment anywhere. YouTube. I try to go YouTube live, or not YouTube live, but Facebook live. Give me some ideas. Give me some places to go. I'm a very adventurous person, and I'm ready. The weather's here.
All right, for our junk drawer, I actually picked this out and realized it kind of goes hand in hand with the symbolism. But we've discussed here and there auras, and so we're going to just kind of delve into that just the tiniest bit. This could also be an episode someday, so we'll just give you some basics. But basically, there are 7 layers. Every person has 7 layers of aura. And they are physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. There's a few that have some little deeper layers. The first is the etheric layer, which outlines the body. It's about 2 inches away from you. And it gives you the conditions of the health of the physical body. The second is an emotional layer. It's kind of an oval shape. It's about 4 inches away from the body. And it's going to change depending on your mood, depending on where you're at that day. And whatever color associates to crazy busy, that's what color mine is. Third is the mental layer. It's about 4 to 8 inches from the body. And mental health issues commonly will present themselves in that layer. The fourth layer is called the astral bridge layer. It's approximately 8 to 12 inches away from the body. It's going to be kind of the window into the person's spiritual nature. It represents love, well-being, and life balance. The sixth layer is called the celestial layer, and it's going to be 2 to 3 feet away, and it's your subconscious mind. And then the last is the cathartic template layer. And it's the final layer, obviously, and it kind of just holds all the other layers together. It's like the cell membrane of your auras. It just kind of holds everything together. Get big hug.
Kether is a term that comes from Kabbalah, from the Tree of Life from Kabbalah. Just throwing that out there.
Awesome. Anyway, so those are your 7 aura layers.
I had no idea that it went out so many feet. It extended so far. Because sometimes I just sit and stare at people to try to go out of focus with my eyes to try to see the aura. And I'm always looking right up next to the body. I'm not looking within feet of their head or anything.
And I think I could be wrong. I will look into this. But when someone tells you the color of your aura, I think they can see too. I think they see the third, which is, or let's see here. I think it's the second where it's your mood. But the main one is going to be your fourth layer, which is your spiritual nature, just kind of who you are as a person.
And how far away is that one?
That is the one that is 8 to 12 inches away.
Interesting. I would have never thought of that.
If I'm wrong, if you're more of an aura person than I am, please let me know. But I believe that's the one. So if I've been told that I have a yellow aura, and I believe that's your astral bridge layer that you're seeing.
Interesting.
So there we go. There's more about every color, what every color means, but
that's a whole episode.
We will do that one later.
So much.
I just wanted to say thank you to our YouTube insiders, our patrons. We have a couple of new microphones that we're using today for the first time, and their patronage and donations help us fund the podcast and pay for the web hosting and all of the things that we're doing and new equipment that we're getting. We want to get a new soundboard for, or get a soundboard for Klaus so we can add some cool sound things. It's one of the things we're looking for to make our podcasts even more interesting. But we have used that money for a couple of really nice new studio microphones, and we've got everybody updated to using the same microphones now.
These are nice microphones.
Thank you.
They're pretty snazzy.
And last, get your Supernatural Hour swag at advancedparanormal.com. We've got shirts, mugs, stickers.
Tapestries.
Always tapestries.
I only say that because there's a new tapestry behind Chad here that says Advanced Paranormal Services.
Yeah.
So now we got two tapestries in our attic of despair.
We have two.
Two tapestries.
And you know what?
Feeling cute up here. We're feeling good.
Feeling cute. My podcast later. And I'm sorry, but saying tapestry just is fun.
It's not a word that gets used often. Let's be honest.
It makes you feel.
Let's bring tapestry back.
We use it every single session.
Yes, we use it, but more people should use tapestry.
If you don't hear us say tapestry, it's imposters.
That's right. It's the stamp. That's how you know.
Super sus.
And Rogue has just bought some awesome new magnets for our Wisps mobile.
Oh?
We have a Wisps
mobile? Raven bought them.
Oh, Raven bought them. Sorry, Rogue.
I was wow.
We meant you're going to buy them. Thank you.
Yeah, and again, thank you, patrons, for that. That's helping pay for those things. It's Supernatural Hour and Advanced Paranormal. We're going to be involved in some parades and some things, and we will be able to display those magnets proudly on our vehicle.
Fancy car magnets.
Fancy car magnets.
Mm-hmm. Or all sorts of fancy, or tapestries and our magnets.
It'll be fun.
You better have your tapestries hanging on the back of those vehicles as well.
Like you do have to tell them about our placement in the parade.
Oh.
Okay, so we're going to be in a parade on June 5th in Cedar Hills, Utah. And apparently, the person who lined up the parade put our ghost hunting entry directly behind the local funeral home.
Oh, that's going to go great.
Oh,
I'm excited about
so
this.
Awesome. So I'm trying to decide if it would be tacky to play on that or if we should just mind our own business in our little bubble.
Man, no, you play on that. They put you there for a reason.
Oh, absolutely.
And what does the organizer want you to do?
I asked if we could be in the parade. And she said, absolutely, as long as we can play the Ghostbusters theme song as you pass the grandstand.
I don't know if you guys know this, but Chad is wearing a shirt that says, After Lives Matter. So maybe we should all don some After Lives Matter shirts while we're parading behind the funeral home.
I love it. That is awesome.
Oh, this is going to be a lot of fun. Anyway, if you want to come see us in a parade, that's where we'll be.
Cedar Hills, Utah. What's the date?
June 5th, 10 a.m.
And we want to do a shout-out to a patron, Bella. And we're glad to have her aboard, and we're excited to have her as part of our patron community.
She's awesome. I know her.
Welcome.
Y'all are awesome, but I've actually met her.
We've met a few of you, and we enjoy meeting you. So
yes, we do.
Please, you know, patron or not, when we are on our investigations and public investigations, we love getting to know people and having them tell us what they like about our podcast.
Perfect. All right. Well, also, we have our own shop at advancedparanormal.com where you can find sage spray. We just got our lip balm in. We've got some cleansing kits. So check out the shop again at advancedparanormal.com.
Just hit the shop tab.
And then my new job is TikTok. So advanced.paranormal, go find our TikToks. We put stuff up there fairly regularly. It's fun.
And it's been fun to see Rogue putting some of the Facebook Live things up. So go out and look at those.
Yeah, it's fun trying to get out there and trying to interact with everybody.
And then just some of Friends of Wisps. We've got the Barbary Coast, where we talked about earlier. If you want a really good pretzel, drizzled with caramel and chocolate and stuffed with cream cheese, very low calorie, go have one. And Dalton's and Oteo's restaurants, fabulous food. Castle's Nature Studio. He is also branched out from doing just nature to portraits. So if you need someone to take your photo, give him a shout. Boar Off-Road Backcountry Off-Road
Rally?
Adventure Rally. They've got as long a name as we do. Holy cow.
That's why you guys are such good friends.
If you like to get into some jeeping and some off-roading, they're a great group. And they,
and
like
service
we
projects.
Said before, they love the service projects. And then Utah Freeze Dried for Pets.
Utah Freeze Dried for Pets / Rescue Pets Bathhouse, because we're a long name, too.
So many long names.
I know, right?
I think that's an episode.
Yep. Stay spooky, my haunty friends.
I love you, Nicholas.
Good night.
Have a good one.
Hey, good night.
You've been listening to the Supernatural Hour at AdvancedParanormal.com. The Supernatural Hour is part of the Radio Ronin Network, found at RadioRonin.com. Copyright 2021 by Advanced Paranormal Services.